Hi, we're at the Glue Network Freedom Project with David Batstone and Stephanie Freed, and they've been doing lots of work to bring awareness to the human trafficking.
And not just awareness, but actually in the trenches, as far as Stephanie goes, correct? Stephanie, why don't you explain what you do?
Okay, Rafa House is it's basically a safe home in Cambodia for girls who have been human trafficked. They've been forced to work in prostitution, sold by their families or an acquaintance, and trafficked either domestically or internationally across the border. And whenever they're rescued, they're brought back to Rafa House in order to have a time of healing and safety and an opportunity to have an education, opportunity to basically have some hopes and dreams.
And David, your book is...
It's not for sale. You cannot buy it anywhere. I don't care how much you demand to buy it, it won't be for sale. No, it's called Not For Sale, The Return of the Global Slave Trade and How We Can Fight It. Came out about 3 months ago, and really the more important thing than a book is that in the process of investigating this as a journalist, very early on, it became clear to me that I needed to do more than just report on it, but I had to get engaged in the fight against it and try to mobilize more folks to do great things like Rafa House are doing, so that there's volunteers and financial support and grassroots constituencies that can say, hey, we want to help out and either help those existing groups or start new ones.
And you learned of the human trafficking in San Francisco. You told the story of an Indian restaurant?
Yeah, in my own backyard. I was going to this restaurant on a regular basis, and even though the girls that were at the restaurant seemed very young, it didn't cross my screen. It just didn't appeal to me that they were actually slaves. And so it was my shock when I picked up my San Francisco Chronicle, my local newspaper, and there they reported that this restaurant was the center of a trafficking ring for up to 500 young girls coming from India. And so I began to look deeper into it and found that it was not just this one case, but it was everywhere. Here in the United States, anywhere from 150 to 200,000 people in captivity. Worldwide, 27 million. And how can we not do something about that?
And what can people do?
People can do what they are... skilled at, what they're passionate about, what they're good at. I don't want folks to feel like they have to be a care provider like Rafa House, or they have to be a writer like David Batstone. What they can do is what they love to do. Athletes can do things. They can pledge by their performance goals. They can set targets that they will give time or money to the movement. Lawyers and investigators and business people can give of their skills to help emancipated slaves get protection, services, and a future. Students, like my students in San Francisco, they're mapping the invisibility of slavery and making it visible. Churches, they can be safe sanctuaries, havens. They can provide commerce for emancipated slaves. They can provide a real kind of moral commitment in the community that we need to make a priority for those who are being trafficked rather than treating them like illegal immigrants or somehow otherwise treating them as criminals.
Stephanie, one of the big messages tonight was that even though this is such a huge problem, it's a problem that can be tackled. You working with these women and children day in and day out, is there an inspirational story of one particular girl that you could share?
Well, I think that the fact that the girls are there in the home is inspirational because that means that they're not in a brothel tonight. I have 60 girls in the home and 10 in a halfway house. That's 70 girls that are not living in fear tonight. So for me, that's huge. As far as one girl's inspirational story, I have two girls who have... reintegrated and are doing very well in a business situation. So that's a huge thing for, you know, these girls are uneducated. They're from the simplest villages. Most of them come to us not even knowing how to read or write. So for them to reintegrate with a business behind them, it's inspirational. It really is.
One story that you spoke about tonight was that you brought a young girl into, and I think you explained that then she got taken back to her family and resold it back into the slave trade. How can you help the families so that they don't have to sell these their children into it?
Yeah, well, that's a whole big cultural issue. And right now we're just really trying to tackle
getting them out.
The girls. That is something like a whole other ball game, but that's huge, yeah. But there are many good Cambodians that are very offended that this is going on in their countries. I have an entire staff of Cambodian nationals who are passionate about rescuing and rehabilitating these girls.
We've also been joined by Aaron Cohen. Aaron, hi.
Hello.
Hi. Now, you work in getting these women and children out, directly out of the trade and into a place like the house run by Stephanie, correct?
That's right. I've been working as a slave hunter for about 10 years. And, for example, after the tsunami, there were a lot of children who ended up in the shelters and then were sold into trafficking after the tsunami when their parents were killed in the tsunami. So I spent 2 years searching for those children with some of the parents. It's tragic to look for slaves because oftentimes you don't find the ones you're looking for, but you end up finding an entire bevy of young children you weren't looking for.
So what got you involved in this in the beginning?
Well, my parents had a lot to do with it. My mother was a woman of faith and was interested in the subject of the Jubilee. The Jubilee is the biblical law of slave retrievals. So she programmed me really well, and her little robot is spinning his wheels today.
I think I read that you wrote a book about the Jubilee also?
Yes, I wrote the Jubilee Prophecy. And like a lot of other of the contemporary authors today in the human trafficking movement, we're trying to raise awareness. Another great campaign is the Not For Sale campaign that's going on right now. That's a campaign I really get behind a lot. And they've galvanized the movement in a way that is just, for me, it's so exciting because initially we were trying to prove slavery existed. And now we have these charismatic individuals out there publishing books, like the Not For Sale book my friend David published. And I'm just so excited to see the movement actually happening. We went from trying to prove slavery existed to now 150 legislations around the world, things happening because a few people like Stephanie and David stood up and believed and did something.
Now, I was reading the preface of the book, and I saw that your publisher called you a cross between Indiana Jones and Gandhi. Now, what's it like to be in the trenches working on this? I mean, what kind of, what are some of the, give me a story of an instance where you've had to go in and work with authorities to battle against the people that are running these trades.
Well, the case of Leah Torelli, she was one of the tsunami victims. Leah Torelli apparently survived the tsunami. There are police reports that show that she had survived. Her mother died and her godparents died and some of her other family members died. And then her father, Aldo Torelli, contacted me to help find Leah. And I began, this was during the toxin era in Thailand, so in 2004 I began searching for Leah. It became one of the most tragic chapters of my life because we never found Leah. But her mother was Japanese, her father was Italian, so we were able to get the Italian embassy and the Japanese embassy to put pressure on the Thai government. And at that time, the Thai government reacted really negatively. They began to put police following us and harassing us and intimidating us. And so what we did was we tried to work instead with the military, with the Council for National Security, specifically with a general there, General Pichai. And General Pichai showed good faith. And despite the fact that the police were harassing us, the military stepped up and retrieved all of those young girls that we found along the way while we were searching for Leah. And then eventually what happened was they handed over the remains of Leah to Aldo, her father, and he had the tragic day of realizing his little girl was gone. But I believe that she didn't die in the tsunami, and I'm not sure exactly how Aldo sees the situation. It's probably best that he doesn't think the way I think about it. But that led to some political problems with myself and the Thai government at the time. But then on September 19th this year, a coup d'etat occurred, and the gentleman who I had worked with invited me to come and interview them during the coup d'etat. We like to think of it as the coup de grace, because these guys were funding a terrorist war and involved in human trafficking and drugs trafficking. So that's one case where we were trying to find one little girl. We found hundreds of other missing children, and were involved in this whole political intrigue with a government that was very unstable and ultimately was overthrown by the same parties I was working with.
That leads to a question: what is our government here in the U.S. doing to combat this in the other countries?
Well, you know, David could probably speak better about that than me, but I know that the Trafficking Victim Protection Act has created a change, and that since then there's legislation that's affecting change, but David probably could address that question better than myself.
Well, I don't know how well I can do it, but I can stumble my way through the question, I reckon. It's really, as Aaron mentions, in terms of protection here, certainly the what's called the TVPA has provided a visa for those at least who can provide some kind of information about their trafficker. That's not good enough, I don't think, but at least it's a start. It's better than most countries have in terms of protection for trafficking victims. But I think anyone who's been trafficked should get protection and should be embraced and given legal and social services to help them back on their feet. Internationally, that legislation that was passed in Congress and really allowed for a grading, a grade, tier one, tier two, tier three, for each country relative to their performance on prosecution, their performance on providing care for those women or men who had been trafficked. It was a great idea, and it still is. It's great structure, great framework. The first year was remarkable. Countries that have long time had an alliance with the United States, like Russia or Israel, they were on tier three, the worst tier. And people were surprised that, oh my gosh, I can't believe we actually had an objective analysis of, because Russia and Israel are terrible in trafficking. But unfortunately, all the lobbies came out the next year, and so, you know, here we are now 5 years later, and unfortunately it's more of a reflection of who our friends are and who our enemies are. I bet you I could ask you, tell me a country you think's on the list of tier three. Let me see. Venezuela, North Korea. You know, you could tell me the 10, right? So the fact of the matter is, great structure, great law. We just need to make sure that we have a mobilized constituency that can keep our State Department and our own elected officials accountable to it.
People are inspired after hearing this story, and they can't go and take political action like the two, and after they read the book. Is there a way that they can contact you? Can they send you items that you need at the house?
We have a real problem with taking things to Cambodia. It's like, it's just so much easier with Thailand right there, just to be able to get the items we need from Thailand. But absolutely, anybody who feels like they need to do something about this issue needs to do something about this issue. It's something that we can all do, whether you find a worthy organization to get behind, and you just get behind it, like Lily with this fund, you know, this fundraiser for IJM. I mean, she just found herself passionate about an issue, and she's doing something about it. And we just need people to do that, to get passionate about these kids. We need for people to understand that they are our responsibility. Every one of us has a responsibility towards these children. And we all need to get behind it and do something about it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks
so
for
much.
Talking with us.
And we're Pirate Pods, and we end our podcast with a R or a pirate impression. Would you mind doing that?
Arr!
Thank you. Thank you.